It's time for this week's CarCast with your host, Adam Carolla, and the professor, Sandy Ganz.
Yeah, get it on, and welcome to the CarCast. Legend Steve Saline is here, and I've said Saline and Saline. I've heard it different ways. I'm sure you get bugged all the time, but just for the record,
it's Saline, like in
Saline,
like in gasoline.
Ah,
see, so
smart.
Now you'll remember.
Steve makes one of my favorite cars, the S7. Which is just a beautiful looking supercar. I saw the S7 in full race trim, probably at Laguna Seca. I think it was at Laguna Seca when I was at the there for the American Le Mans series a couple years back. And car looks spectacular, stock, but in race trim, it's just an animal.
It actually has been, you know, from my perspective, it's really been pretty phenomenal. We introduced the car in August of 2000, and the car, from a racing standpoint, arguably has been the most successful supercar made, in the respect that it won as recently as 2 weeks ago over in England at Silverstone. And the car has either won the race, set the fastest race lap, or been on pole position at every major racetrack in the world, with no exception.
How many of those have you made over the last 8 or 9, or I guess...
almost 10 years.
10 years.
Yeah, we made just a little bit under 100 of them total, of which, and there was about, I think, 12 or 14 race versions made as well.
How do you go about that? And now you're starting a new company, the SMS company, and you brought a Challenger out with us.
Yes, our first... I'm expanding, and the first new product we're doing is, we call it the SMS 570 or 570X, is the Challenger.
Well, all right, so you started back in the day, you were a racer yourself. Was your father a racer?
No, I actually grew up here in Southern California, and always was obviously keen in the car culture.
Right.
Aspect of it. And I went to my first race in 1972, I think. And the worst possible thing happened is I won.
Oh,
at that point in time, I was hooked, and I've continued on racing since then.
It's like liking heroin the first time you try heroin. You should hope you just throw up and have a bad experience. You should have wrecked and had to hitchhike home, but instead you turn into a racer. And so you're professional racing. Did you race Trans Am?
I've raced everything from sports cars to IndyCar to race trucks.
Race trucks,
yeah,
really?
Yeah, and that I will say that's the most fun I've ever had in racing, is racing the pickup trucks all over the United States and Canada. Was the wildest racing that you could ever get.
Now, is this pre sort of Craftsman truck series?
Yes, in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s, SCCA came out with a pro truck series, and they were the mini trucks. We were the Ford factory race team. You'd run two or three of them. I had everyone from George Fulmer and Parnelli Jones driving with us, and Parnelli's son actually won a race. I actually culled the most wins in that series over that period of time as a driver, but that was a lot of fun, and we invented the word bump drafting, and that was that took racing to a whole different level.
Yeah, I can imagine, because I mean, if you're driving a stock car, there's plenty of paint trading, but if you're driving a truck, just even if it's prepped like a race car, even if it costs as much to build as a race car, it just emotionally, you're driving a pickup truck. So there's nothing wrong with a little bump draft. So the new company, I mean, everyone knows you for your relationship with Mustang and the Saline Mustangs, and it's always been, at least to my knowledge, always been the connection with Ford. Now you're branching out.
Yes.
You're doing Dodge. You're going to do Chevy.
Yes, with the Camaro, yes.
Ford would bring you X amount of Mustangs, and you would start taking off the bumpers and pulling out the engines or doing whatever it is, and you just start going through them. But they would always bring you whole, complete cars, right?
Well, I've done it. I actually, over the years, I've done it all different ways. I used to have, in the early years, I started with a complete car, and we strip it completely down to the chassis. Mm-hmm. And then we build it back up. Suspension, aerodynamics, body component, interior, engine, drivetrain, headlights, taillights, you name it.
Right.
And then sell it as a new car off of a dealership showroom. Then I came up with the brilliant idea of having, well, maybe I can get Ford initially in the early years to maybe strip down the car so it would just show up on skinny tires, not right. have all the interior in it. And I thought that was a great idea. And so I talked Ford into doing that, and they started shipping me the cars. What I found out, though, is that the discount between not having a complete car and that was pretty nominal. So I've over the years, I've actually started just take the complete car as the factory would consider it as a built car and then take it apart.
You know, I was thinking about this market of, you know, with so many, just take rims. Every single person that gets themselves a Scion or Mini Cooper or a Dodge, you know, everybody drives a. There must be some place where there's 10 million Cadillac Escalade stock 16-inch rims somewhere, right? I mean, if every right. single, I mean, they don't do it with Priuses, but like Mustangs, there must be billions of stock Mustang 15 or 16 inch steel rims somewhere, right? I mean, where does this stuff all go?
Well, actually, fortunately, that the major manufacturers build enough cars to where, and they're on the road, is that when we take what we call the takeoff parts, there is actually a pretty good market for there at a discount.
Needing that, front bumpers.
Yes, like Hertz rental car.
Oh, I never thought about that.
Or budget, or people need tires and wheels because they've actually worn theirs out.
I never thought about that. So it's like if Hertz rental car, budget rental car, has 100,000 Mustangs in their fleet, and you've got 5,000 front bumpers,
and they're all painted, just tell me what color you want.
Yeah, so you just give it to them, and it's still the same factory paint. Because right. I was trying to figure out where all the crap you pulled off all these cars went.
It's recycled. So
what about the labor for your guys to pull off all this stuff? I'm sure you have it down to a science, but it must take some time.
Well, we have our process is not what we'll call a stall bill or an aftermarket bill. It's a full-on production line. Mm-hmm. And the vehicles come in. It goes through what we'll call a stripping in the first two stations, where the engine and transmission will get taken out, all the suspension, body pieces, and all of that will be stripped. Then it goes into as a shell, and then from then it goes through the actual assembly process, where all of the components get added on, and then a final inspection, a test drive, and shipped directly to the customer.
You're essentially a car manufacturer who manufactures other people's cars.
I'm calling them signature cars because mm-hmm. basically I start with an existing chassis, i.e. the Challenger, Mustang, or the Camaro,
right.
and then we put, if you will, my signature on
it. And when we were talking earlier about the then aftermarket part of this, which is it starts off at the signature car, but then I could also buy your cold air induction system and put it on my car?
Yes, or our supercharger. We have a brand new supercharger that has six intercoolers in it, which we'll see.
Six
intercoolers.
So then what you're doing is, now I don't know if Chevy cares that you're working with Dodge or Ford cares that you're working with Chevy. I mean, in the past you were a Ford guy. And now you're dating a lot of car companies. How's that working out?
Well, it actually is has actually worked out fine in the respect that, traditionally I started with Ford, so I guess kind of when you start, you kind of get tagged with it. But
right.
the S7 that we built certainly was there was only one Ford componentry, and that was the. On the electric window on the rail, I used a part from a Mustang on the S7 for more.
But it had a Ford power plant.
No,
right?
No. And again, that's where the misconception was.
Who built that V8?
That was ours. The casting, the block casting, was one that we did. The heads were ours, and I used the head gasket I used from Ford because I used the same bore size.
But, boy, you're a maniac, Steve. Why not just take, I don't know, an aluminum big block and put it in there?
Well, was aluminum. It was aluminum.
No, I know, but isn't it much more cost effective for you to...
Well, I guess I could go buy a car off the dealership showroom on doing it, but it wouldn't be a true car if I don't think we built all of it. And plus, we felt the again, part of what we were looking at, and one reason why the car has been so successful, is we were looking at, obviously, the packaging. We needed a very, we wanted a V8, American-style
right.
engine, okay, because
right.
I felt it needed to be American.
Right.
But it needed to be a very compact engine, so the Fiat on the front of the motor was very compact. The way that we designed all of that and the way the induction system went through, all of that was designed so it fit in the low center of gravity. It had a very good pivotal points.
How many cubic
that.
Inches is that in?
It was the S7 stood for 7 liters, so that was basically in speak, that's 427 cubic inch.
Yeah. Right, 6 times 7, or 7 times 6, or whatever.
Yeah,
somewhere in there. And I'm impressed. I assumed you did sort of a, I don't know, Carroll Shelby sort of thing, or you know, I assumed you like shoehorned a big block, a good big block, but a big block into that car. But I didn't know you made that big.
Yeah, the castings.
That big block.
The castings of the aluminum block and the heads and all of that were part of what we went through the design process of it, the crank, the rods, pistons, the valve train,
and
all
I,
of it. Again, the one thing that maybe is a little unique about us is that we don't do anything from a cosmetic standpoint. What we do is, again, everything that we do on the vehicle is to improve the performance of it. So the front fascia, the side skirts, the rear fascia, all of that is made to give us better airflow, less drag, more downforce, all
yeah,
of those
get,
type of
you
things.
You get some brake cooling, but it looks cool while you're braking. So it's like, yeah, I know
yeah.
everything is form following function over at Saline, but it ends up looking, it's well, weird because you do, it is cosmetic because the big brakes look better
in the
you know, front air dam with the induction and, you know, to cool the brakes and so on and so forth. It just looks that much more aggressive. Now, where is your shop and how big is it?
We have, we've just opened up. In fact, we had a grand opening a couple weeks ago, but we're actually on the border between Orange County and Riverside County on the 91 freeway.
Mm-hmm.
It's really the most unique shop I've had to date. It's actually a campus. It consists of three separate buildings. About all total, it's a little over 150,000 square feet.
Wow!
And we do all the engineering, manufacturing, design, everything in-house under the roofs. But we have two models. We make currently the 570 on the Challenger, and that's 500 horsepower. And then I brought out the 570X, and that's your standard 700 horsepower.
And let me just ask you technically, and maybe we should just be standing around the cars talking about this, but when you get 700 horsepower into a car that had 400 or 375 or whatever
yes.
it came out of the factory with, how much do you have to do to the rear end? How much do you have to do to the transmission? Or do you? Can it handle
no.
it?
We change everything. It's,
everything's gone.
Yeah, first of all, on the car I brought out, the only thing on the engine that's the same is that the basic block is the out appearance of the block is the same as you would see in a standard Dodge. The internals, everything is different. It's different crank, rods, pistons, heads have been changed, camshafts, valve springs, clutch, flywheel, clutch. The transmission is different. The gears in the transmission are different. The drive shaft is different. And then you get into the differential, or all of that has been beefed up to handle the 700 horsepower.
Now, as far as the business model goes for you guys, then you get the cars at some sort of dealer rate, I would imagine.
Well, we actually get the cars directly from Dodge, Ford,
mm-hmm.
and we bring them in. We then do all of the remanufacturing of the vehicle, and we send it back to the Ford or the Dodge dealer. And then the consumer can go into that, or they can call us directly, and we can then help assist them on either finding a dealer in their neck of the woods, or they can talk to us, you know, directly.
So and you'll have the Camaros, you'll have the Dodge Challenger, and is there one I'm missing?
And the Mustang.
Oh, and the Mustang, yes. the good old Mustang. Now, you brought a Mustang and you brought a Challenger with
yes,
you.
Yes, I brought what we brought here was our latest product, which is the 570X, 700 horsepower of our Dodge Challenger. And then we also brought my daughter's car, which is the Mustang, which is bright pink that you won't miss.
Should we go take a look at these cars?
Yeah.
All right, now in the parking lot with Steve Saleen and his 570X Challenger. So tell me about the car, Steve.
Well, it started life as a Dodge Challenger. And then we completely, as I mentioned, we strip it completely down to nothing but a bare shell. And then we start building it up from the suspension, the aerodynamics with the front and rear fascias and the ground effects. It has a different wheel tire combination, much bigger brakes.
Are those six pistons?
Yes, they are.
Wow, that's large. And it's got to suck, though. It's got to suck for the other guys at the dealership who think the Challenger's a really hot car, and then they see your car parked next to it, and all of a sudden it looks like a cat turd. I mean, you're all pumped up about getting your Challenger, and then you kind of see what it could be, and then you're disappointed. So you've caused that. Hopefully the people then step up and get your car. What's going on here?
Well, here, I'll if you look at that, let me...
I'm pointing at the hood, by the way, for people that are listening at home. There seems to be some kind of crazy induction going on here.
Yes, and this is actually, again, as I mentioned, everything we do really actually is functional. And what we have is what we call our red butterfly induction system, mm-hmm. like a dragster. And it's hooked up to when you step on the throttle, they open.
Wow, that is bitchin'.
And it feeds through the hood into the airbox.
Just like the old dragsters, or even the new dragsters, they have those great butterflies up front on top of the blower.
And
that's a nice tip there.
And that's really pretty cool, because what it, besides being functional, the other thing is on a city street, it's a lot of fun to go to a stoplight, pull up alongside a guy in a BMW, and all you have to do is rev your engine a couple of times, flashing your red butterflies, and you don't even have to race.
Yeah. Now, this thing is how many cubic inches?
This is 700 horsepower.
These cars are warrantied, right?
Complete factory warranty.
I always like the fact that you number all your cars. Wow, look at that supercharger.
This is our brand new, what we call the SMS 296 supercharger. And what this is this actually is a twin screw mm-hmm. supercharger. Mm-hmm. It has a lot of volume of air that goes through it to handle a larger size motor.
Yeah.
And we worked hard on the intercooling. There's actually six round intercoolers in this area that keeps it to where the charge temperature really stays under control.
Yeah, well, the whole thing about turbocharging or supercharging is you just can't let that heat, you can't let that hot air get in there, or you get the pre-detonation, and nobody wants that. And you can run more boost if you can keep it cool.
Yeah, exactly. And because of that, this again, we've made it to where the induction system is as large and unrestrictive as we can, because every time you make a bend or whatever, you're costing yourself a little bit of efficiency.
Yeah, well, we're looking at, again, if you're just listening to this, is the, you have your fuel.
We have a larger throttle body.
Yeah, your throttle body, and you got your cone filter there. And I like it because this thing's usually made out of plastic. And in your case, it's cast out of aluminum.
Yeah, this is actually all casting part. The other thing that's kind of nice about it is we're using an 8-rib pulley. Mm-hmm. And what the advantage there is that you won't get any slipping mm-hmm. When you step on the throttle.
What's a standard? How many ribs in a standard?
Everything from four, maybe six if you're going to get it. On my previous models of supercharging, we went to a six. But we've now have gone well past that into doing it.
And this is where the water enters, and here's where it leaves the intercooling system?
Actually, again, that's an innovative way. This is a one pass, which, again, makes it a lot more efficient. In the front, we have the heat exchanger.
Right. the radiator, essentially.
Yes, the water actually comes in on both of these sides, mm-hmm. and it exits on the back side.
Uh-huh.
So it just goes through once through the six intercoolers.
Right. Comes back around,
and then comes back in through the intercooler again.
Yeah. In again.
Yep.
And I don't know a ton about superchargers, but this pulley looks smaller than I would normally expect to see on this.
No, it actually, again, the pulley size will vary. It depends on, you know, obviously, the ratio between the crank pulley
right.
and what's driving the supercharged right. pulley. From a technical standpoint, you want to run the supercharger, the actual compressor, you know, at between roughly about 14,000, 15,000 RPM mm-hmm. is where it's most efficient. So then what you do is you go through the different sizes with the size of engine that you have and calibrate it to that point.
So how many pounds of boost is this making?
This, to make 700 pounds or 700 horsepower is actually not that much on it. We're really at about 5 pounds of boost. So 4.5, 5 pounds.
So it's not working that hard.
It isn't in doing that. It's easy. If you want to add more boost to it, it will raise the horsepower. But again, recognize I'm not building a race car here. This is an everyday driving production car that comes complete with warranty and everything that you would want to have.
And you can drive it on the street every day. So
yes.
Now the price for a car like this versus a stock version of this?
Well, obviously, it's a little bit more expensive. It's,
I'm counting on that.
The actual price point is, on this particular car, as you see it, would be about $85,000.
But how many cars under $100,000 have more
that have well that, and that's exactly
what,
show me the car that has 700 horsepower that you can get
right.
at that price. We've always been about very good value.
Yeah.
That's always been a kind of a trademark of mine. It's really, even though it may seem obviously next to a Honda or a used car a lot more expensive, and certainly it is, but it's always been about very good value and also about good resale value, which is why each car is serialized and well documented, goes into the registry, all of those type of things.
Well, can we fire it up and hear
certainly.
The engine? That's healthy sounding. Is that vacuum powered?
No, it's on cable.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's just a pain motion.
Wow. Well, let's talk about what you've done to the interior.
Well, the interior, we've actually done quite a bit. It's completely different seating, front and rear.
Right.
It's actually the only thing that is the same is the actual frame is the same. All the foam, mm-hmm. all the upholstery and everything is unique. It's built more for performance-style driving.
Uh-huh.
And we'll have you sit in a second here to see. We've also changed, again, all of the gauges and a lot of the accessories. It has a different short throw shifter that we've put into it.
Because, 6 speed, I would imagine.
Yes, a 6 speed, and it's we've also put in a different gauge pod that so you can
gauge.
See the boost and the air temperature.
Mm-hmm.
In doing that, comes complete with extras that you can get the sound system.
Get the studio.
Yeah.
Sound system.
Yeah.
And I've noticed a sort of signature Celine seat stripe
yeah,
there.
Yeah, we've used, if you've looked at the history, I've always used what I would call the chevrons, which is on the mm-hmm. front fenders or down below. And then we're carrying that now into the actual interior of the vehicle.
Right.
So that's that has actually worked out very well.
That's a nice looking short throw shifter. I like the knob. Gauge clusters look good.
Yes, all of that. And I'll let you.
Oh, look at me in a Dodge. Who would have thunk it? Now, do you sign every
yes,
one of them?
Yes. What again? Another feature is that, in addition to doing that, they all come with my signature on it, which is, again, speaks to kind of the signature concept that we're doing.
Yeah, well, that is a very, not too many American cars have that short a throw.
We also offer an automatic.
Oh, really?
And the automatic, the work that we do on that is unbelievable, to where it is like having almost a paddle shifter, both on the upshifts and the downshifts, mm-hmm. that it does for yourself. And it's it really is a very technically advanced piece as well.
You also brought along your daughter's Mustang.
Yes.
Oh, getting angrier at my dad by the second. Dad builds me a custom Mustang. But, so yeah. Is this the new...
No, this is actually the last... this would be 2009. So we actually will show our 2010 here in the next month or so.
Mm-hmm.
On it. But it's, they are somewhat similar because the architecture is very similar from the old to the new. But again, it's very much into our philosophy where all of the panels here have been changed. The only thing that's the same as Ford built it is the front fender, mm-hmm. the door skin, and the rear quarter skin are the same.
How many of these babies you move in hot pink?
This is the only one we've actually done and it's called actually Molly Pop. Her name's Molly, and that's so.
I want to talk to her because if she ever says a bad word about you, I tell you
that it works out well because I actually have Molly's sightings around town to where I can actually always get phone calls and people know exactly right. Where she is driving around.
It's either her or Angeline, but...
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so this baby is an 09
yes.
Ford Mustang?
Yeah, it started life as that.
And
we put in a... This has a unique scenic roof in it.
She's got the keys to it. Now, this scenic roof is essentially an all-glass roof.
It's all glass. It's glass to glass on that. Actually, I have the patent on that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that we actually applied for a number of years ago.
Why do you got to think of this crap, Steve?
I'm sorry?
Why do you have to think of this stuff?
Who else is going to?
Well, this should come like this. It seems so cool.
It's a very dramatic...
It's very silhouette-y, if you're a Hot Wheel fan.
Yeah, it's very dramatic. This has the forged aluminum wheels on this particular... The back has been changed dramatically. And part of what we do is, both on the Challenger on this, because of the pony car, again, and the downforce in the wind tunnel, all that, we've actually extended both cars 2.5 inches.
Oh, really?
Yes, and so it's done very subtly. But if you actually look at it, we actually do the wind tunnel so that we actually can get on the track mm-hmm. a better advantage on the ability to have high-speed stability with the cars.
I can see how much deeper the taillights seem to be set
yes, in. Yes, yeah, you will see. And on the new Mustang that we're doing this, you'll see something very similar.
The exhaust set up looks great, too.
Yeah, we do the center exhaust.
And you have diffuser
on
in
that,
the back.
And the aerodynamics on doing that. It's got the carbon trim. Up front
and how are we doing? How much in the horsepower department?
Well, again, these models is 475 horsepower mm-hmm. for the what we'll call the 460 base, and it's 660 horsepower for the X version
right.
of that. And now, so that's not as much, but we recognize we're starting with a 4.6 liter. Engine, not a 5.7 liter.
Right.
And the Mustang is lighter than the Challenger.
And the only one we haven't seen is a Camaro.
The new Camaro.
I guess Camaro, you can go online to see that.
Well, you'll just get a hint at that. So by the first of next year, you'll see our version of that as well.
All right. Well, thanks, Steve.
Well, thank you. And thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Now time for another installment of Investment Car here on CarCast. These are cars that we believe will go up in value over the years. We're not saying you're going to get rich on them, but they'll probably do better than your 401k's been doing over the last few years. And you'll have fun wrenching on them and driving them and bringing them to club events and doing all that in the meantime. Yes, Gans?
Yep.
All right. I'm going to get started. I'm cheating. I'm going to do two cars I own. I'm going to start off with the Dino 308 GT4 Ferrari. Now, it's kind of an ugly car, but it sort of grows on you. And it's boxy. It almost looks like an early generation Lotus, really.
It's got some interesting cross lines, like the front bumper and some of that stuff looks like it.
Yeah, it's a little boxy. One of the things I like about it is it has a V8. In it. It has a 3-liter V8 in it. And the Dino, the curvy, swoopy, rolly, pretty Dino, has, I think, a 2.5 V6 in it.
V6
and the idea of spending $150,000 for a car with a V6 in it never sat well with me. And so basically what you have is a car from essentially the same era. This thing was built from the early 70s to the later 70s. the Dino has a V6, a 2.5, and basically it's going to cost you $150,000, $175,000. These things have a 3-liter V8 and are going to run you $30,000.
Yep.
So to me, not quite as swoopy. And the interior
is nicer.
Is either nicer or almost the same.
It's for my preference, I don't like either one of them.
Right. Thank you.
I do like the V8 because there's more stacks on it. And it's not a bad car. It's actually, for the price, it's a good bargain.
It's mid-engine. It handles nicely. One of the things that gets thrown out oftentimes that you forget about when you talk about mid-engine cars, and especially cars, you know, Ferraris and slightly more exotic cars, is very good visibility. When you get into my Lamborghini Miura, you're scared to back it. I'd be scared to back it out of the salt flats.
We'll get you the beeper thing, like on the back of the Excursion, and let you get right to the edge before you hit.
Yeah, but this car, really good visibility when you're driving the car, low hood, plenty of windows around it, good-looking V8 engine. It has a big air box on top of it that looks like fried hell. We pulled mine off. And Sandy retrofit some nice-looking aftermarket foam racing air filters on top of it.
Looks good, if I may say so myself. The other thing I really like about the car that's unusual, it's got the hatch for the engine, and then behind or in front of it, depending on which way you're looking at it, it's got a trunk.
Yeah.
And you can put shit in the back of the car and still see the motor when you pop that thing up, unlike other cars that are mid-engine, like Boxsters and stuff, where you can never get to it.
5-speed, runs nicely, and again, you can find them all day long for about $30,000. They look pretty good in yellow. They look pretty good in red. There's some two-tone ones where they sort of paint the rocker panels silver or black and paint the top part red.
Nice rims, too. Nice 14.
Yeah, nice 14x6.5 rims on them. And again, you can tell the ladies you're driving a Ferrari. You can tell the dudes you got a V8 and all under $30,000.
Yep. What more do you want for an Italian sports car?
And again, you know, it's never going to be a $100,000 car, but it could get to 50 in the next, you know, 5 years, depending on how the market went.
The other thing, too, it doesn't have the hairdresser look like with the Mondial and some of the other ones. It still looks a little more...
A little more masculine.
Yeah, a little more masculine than that.
Well, what's your first car?
First car, I'm going to go, since Pontiac out of business, soon to be, the car that I'm going to probably go for, Pontiac GTO, 65, 67 with the stacked headlights. A good, brother car to the Chevelle, to the 442, all those in that similar era. But I think Pontiac has a special strong following. I think right now is a good time to get them before they start going crazy. They're a dedicated division of General Motors, as others are. But I think the Pontiacs are a car that's going to hold a lot of value, probably better than the Chevelle series, probably even better than the Oldsmobile. I think people just like the Pontiac muscular.
They like to say GTO, and they like to say GOAT. And I like this version a lot better than when they started going with the sort of weird surfboard, plexi, weird fiberglass.
Yeah, the front snout.
The front snout. Rubber. Rubber snout. They started getting sort of plasticky and weird, and then they got to the Judge, and they started getting cartoony.
Yeah.
I like this car.
It's a good car. They have interesting hood scoops. The lines look... I almost want to say it's a beautiful GM styling from that era that you a lot of cars don't have, and it's a neat car. It's, Pontiacs back in the era was... You didn't have a corporate engine, so you probably got it with a 389 or some variant of that. And I think it would be a pretty good car. It's
yeah, and listen, the point is if you tell someone you have a GTO, no one ever gives you shit.
No, and you can do a lot of stuff with them, a lot of spare parts. Price on those cars, you know, from the shit boxes that you got to, you know, give blood to fix, $10,000 on up to $30,000 for good shape. And if you look for matching numbers, restored cars, they're already starting to crack into the 70s, 80s, 100 for a concourse car. So the value looks like it's to be there for that particular model.
All right. I'm going to one of my favorite makes, BMW. I love the M3s. It's another car I have. The E30 body style. That's the very first years of the M3. I think they made them 87 to maybe 91 or 92, something like that. They had a few different versions of the car. They had the, you know, the Evo versions and the 2.5 stroker and all that kind of stuff. They first off, great looking motor. It's just a four banger, but it has the big cast valve cover and it has the spark plug wires going in the center.
It's which like is the M6, always, they lopped off two cylinders off of it.
Right. And the big plenum that just says M-Power on it that's done in the like crinkle paint. Hot looking. So the engine itself is hot, even if it's only good for like 187 or 190 horsepower. It was actually sort of a lot in those days. And I remember when that car came out, it was really expensive. It was like a $40,000 car in like 1988. I mean, I'm thinking, wow. But it has the box flares on it. The interior is, you know, back before the airbags and the big fat steering wheels and just that sort of very stark German styling, but very functional. The seats weren't big. Things weren't like big and fluffy and round.
No, everything was like. I like that era German car. I don't like the regular style of that car without the flares. It looks just too squared off and, and simple. Almost, you know, plain, so plain
James. 86 to 92, I stand corrected. Yeah, nice car, fun car, smelled German, looked German. A car you could work on yourself, fairly straightforward. And
probably pricey for the M parts, but
yeah, definitely. When you go to the BMW, it's crazy. If you ever go to the BMW dealership and you get to the parts, you know, the parts window, and you're looking for a oxygen sensor or something like that, or a harmonic balancer or something. It's like they start with the 3 series, 5 series, 6 series, 7 series, like finger, and the price keeps getting higher as the guy's finger's dragging down, and then you see the one that says M.
You're fucked.
And it's like, you're fucked. And even if you're looking for a cigarette lighter, if it's in the M department, they just put another zero behind it. These cars, one of these days, I'm going to build a badass, like, 2.7 stroker motor with this thing with, like, 265 naturally aspirated horsepower. But for now, mine is just bone stock. Good looking car, well-built car. These cars go anywhere from probably $8,500 for one that's, like, a little beat on to upwards of like 25 grand for one that's really pristine. But on average, I would say if you had 15 to 20 grand, you could get yourself a really clean, nice version of one of these cars. Also, enthusiasts own these cars. So these, you know, the guy's a podiatrist and he lives in Palm Springs.
Has every original receipt and has every service receipt.
Keeps it in a climate controlled garage.
The bubble.
Doesn't let his kids get near it. So you'll find one of these, you know, single, you know, second owner, first owner. Guy was meticulous with all the service records and stuff. And a car that really looks pretty hot, just bone stock. You really don't have to do anything to it. Handles nicely. Not a supercar performance-wise, but a fun car. And I don't believe you're ever going to lose any money on it.
No, none of them, especially the M stuff. It's just crazy enough rare that you can't go wrong, and you pop the hood on the car, and it's just bitching. So that's like we talked about the early M6s, and you pop the hood, and it's like that plus more cylinders, bigger air boxes,
right?
Just it's a mechanical delight to look at.
And they do make tons of aftermarket stuff for this car now. If you want to go out and do a little track day with it or what have you. All right, your last car, Gaines.
Last car. I'm going English. Old Jag. I'm going to say 63 Mark II series. The little 3.8 Jag motor, wire wheels, four-door. I think those cars are probably underrated. They're
the bubbly looking
ones. They're kind of cool. They're You don't see them that often because I think everyone had an electrical short from Lucas.
They all burn.
Well, they all have Lucas wiring issues, and most people that had those cars probably just crunched them. But they have nice wood, burl wood interiors. Their leather is great in those cars if you find one that's in good shape. And really, there's not that hard to work on. A lot of the Jag stuff is available, and it's kind of an offbeat car that has some style. You know, if you like traditional Jaggy stuff, it's got all the stuff that makes it a Jaguar, the Leaper, all the cool chrome work.
It's not going to be confused. You know, if you drive a new Jag, you may be confused with driving a Lexus or something like that. This car screams Jag.
Yeah, wire wheels. Yeah. You know, that type of thing, I think, is what makes the car have character. It's a really cool little car. It's got the straight six and the two gas tanks that fuck with you when you put 6 gallons in each, and you're going, why don't they just put a crossover tube? What's wrong with these English dudes? But it's just a cool, kind of quirky little car, and I think it's will always be worth something.
What do they go for?
I've seen them, like, you know, starting the low 20s, even dipping below that, but I would be real careful because the Lucas wiring and some of the shit that might need to be gone through could be pricey. So it's better, again, like we keep saying, is spend the extra $5,000, buy one for $25,000, and you got one that somebody's done the woodwork on, the leather work and the wiring, and the motor stuff is, you know, probably pretty good. It's a, you know, it's a good buy, I think. And you can drive those cars. I think the once you get some of the wiring stuff sorted out and some of the quirks of it, it's a fun car. It's Jaguar.
All right, well, let's review. I go with the Dino 308 GT4. It's boxy, but it has a V8 in it, and it's at least $100,000 cheaper than its little brother.
Yeah, and I think it looks better than the older one. I like this style. It's a little more modern. My car, first car pick was the Pontiac GTO, the GOAT. 65, 67-ish with the stacked headlights. Find one with a tri-power, something cool on the engine, always worth more. It's a neat car.
All right. My second and last is the old first-generation E30 M3 BMW. Great-looking motor, great-looking plenum, cool, very German interior. And you don't have to touch a thing on it, and cheap.
And my last one will be early 60s Jag Mark II with the 3.8 wire wheels and all the lovely burl wood trim that you get.
And
in
of course,
car.
The Leaper on the hood.
The Leaper, yes.
All right. Well, there you go. Investment cars. Nice job, Professor. And now let's return to the show. Now time to take your Skype calls with the professor, Sandy Ganz. Let's talk to Aaron from Pasadena. Aaron?
Yeah.
What's going on, Aaron?
Hey, how's it going, Adam?
Good.
Factory 5 guy.
You got a question?
Yeah, I had a question about Factory 5 racing. I'm thinking, is it a good investment? Is it, you know, are you familiar with the car, or what's up?
First of all, cars aren't a good investment unless you buy one of our investment cars.
Thank you.
But the in general, anything with the moniker replica kit car or specialty things, they're iffy at best, I would say, because don't do it unless you want to own it and have fun with it. That's the main thing. If you're building that car to sell it and turn it around, your time will be, you'll get 35, 36 cents a an hour doing the work that you need to do on it.
Well, let me put a finer point on what the professor is saying. In general, I would, whether it was a GT40 or a Shelby Cobra or Shelby Daytona or any of the cars, that the so-called sort of kit cars or tribute cars or whatever cars, let some other asshole build it and you buy it off them.
Yeah,
and I don't know if there's enough Factory Fives out there to do that yet. But in general, like let's just use the Cobra as an example. I see those Cobras nicely built all day long for $35,000, maybe $40,000, even at some like Mecum Auto auction stuff. Those things will go for like $25,000, $30,000. Some guy bought the kit for $35,000 without the motor. Built a nice motor, put the motor in, has hundreds of hours in the garage putting that thing together. It's the same with the GT40s. I'll see those things for sale where you know the guy has hundreds of hours and everything wrapped up into it, and you're just going to take it off his hands for pennies on the dollar. So that's what I would do, unless you really get off building the car yourself. Like if it's the kind of thing where it's like, hey, me and my son want to take a couple years and 80 grand and build a car, that's fine.
Right. It's kind of the thing, like, a lot of the guys do the cars is not so much to, they love the car, but they love building shit. And it's a great thing. The Factory 5 stuff's kind of cool. But go, for a laugh, go pop up eBay and go look at, 427 Cobra kits, and there's probably 50 of them on there. And the same thing, you know, the GTM's a little bit different of a car. I don't know that much about how much I like the chassis on it and some of the other things, but there's a ton of things like it. If you like the thing and you know you're going to want to keep it and haul ass and deal with the, build it yourself thing, you know, go to town. It's a fun thing to do if you got the time.
Well, here's the thing about it, though, is that for 40 grand, you go to 0 to 60 in like 3 seconds, and you build it all yourself. Yeah, you put a lot of hours into it, but you can completely customize it to what you want to have your car to look like.
Oh, so, and it will cost you way more than that. Don't ever. I have a GT40 kit and I have a Cobra kit, and I can tell you that let's say a Porsche 911 transaxle will set you back a couple grand until you find out that you have to have it rebuilt, and then you enter it 8 grand for a gearbox that'll do anything of suitable power. So every bit of that car is going to be different work. The engine will go in, but, oh, now you need an adapter plate. Everything that they sell you is it's like a model kit that you have to file every piece to make fit. Well, this is just the same thing in a bigger scale, and nothing is easy. Go look. Actually, here's a great thing. Go look on the boards for the GTM and see how much fun these guys have talking about how they get things to fit and put together. Same for the GT40. Same for the Cobra guys. But that's the fun of it. People like that. I do. I'll jump into something like that and have years of it sitting in the garage tinkering with it. But to sell it, I'll never buy it to sell.
What the hell's the English kit car with the V6?
The Ultima GTM.
No, I'm not thinking of the Ultima. What am I thinking of?
The Lotus Super 7 kinds with the...
No, we just saw one down at the track last week.
Panos Esperanto. No. It's throwing that out.
Starts with an M, and I can't think of the damn name of that thing.
Noble.
Noble. Sorry, starts with an N. Noble.
The Noble.
Have you checked into the Noble?
Yeah, I've looked into it a little bit, but I don't really like the styling. I mean, I kind of wanted to buy an American car that I could, keep it all domestic.
Well, okay, here's what we'll just say to cap the call. Obviously, you don't buy one of these cars to flip. Nobody buys one of these cars to flip. In general, my feeling with most cars like this is see if you can find one that somebody dumped their life savings into, take it off their hands for pennies on the dollar, and then you spend your last 5 or 10 grand dialing it in and making it your own. But if you want the experience of going through it soup to nuts, by all means, that's your love, that's your hobby, then absolutely do it. To me, the Nobles don't look much different than the car we're talking about. But I agree. Just do it. Understand it's going to be a huge undertaking. And you can just go ahead and add 6 months and 30 grand to any estimates you're trying to figure out.
Oh, yeah. But like I said, I have a GT40 from Race Car Replicas, and they make a Porsche 917 replica. They make I want to call it a car like the Ariel Atom, except you can afford it, and it's a badass with the Suzuki motorcycle engine.
Yeah.
But crazy shit like that. But the thing is, before you do any of that, go up to the news groups or the lists, the discussion or the BBSs, whatever they have, blogs. See who's building one and find out how their support is. Find out how much shit they have to do. And like, oh crap, man, that 930 gearbox is hard to get. By the way, I got 3 in my garage and I'm not selling any of them.
And let me say this quickly, too. Put the caller on hold, please. I want to say this. Don't get caught up in this. It'll beat a Ferrari 599 0 to 60 because you and I could get a Karmann Ghia, toss some Nas on it, put some drag slicks on it, gut the interior, and we could beat a 599
here's the other point
and a quarter mile.
Here's the other good fine point on that. Chicks can smell the real Ferrari. to the GTM or whatever. They go, what is that looking thing? I've never seen that on TV.
Right.
And then you're doomed.
Then someone's going to call the kit car, and you ain't going to get laid.
Exactly.
I'm just saying, I know, look, there are many, there are plenty of Hondas buzzing around this valley that could beat, with the NAS on it, that could beat a Ferrari 0 to 60. It's not, I don't get caught up in that. That's a different car. And by the way, the fit, the finish of that car,
fine Italian leather,
that's a different, it's a different experience. So don't just, you're doing apples to oranges there. All right, Anthony from Seattle.
How are you doing, Adam?
Good, Anthony. What's happening?
What's cooking, Anthony? What's your question? Fire it off, baby.
Oh, sorry. I have a 92 Mustang sitting outside as a secondary car. I'm wondering, am I delusional, or is that something that's going to be worth something in the far future, or is it just a piece of shit?
It's a piece of shit. I mean, they made too many of them. Here's the thing about value in the future. Part of it is how good is the product, but the other main part is how many of them did they make? I mean, like, if they make a baseball card, and they make one where they misspell the guy's name. It says Reggie Jackoff instead of Reggie Jackson, and they only made one of them that came out of the factory that said Reggie Jackoff.
You hit the lottery.
That's why they would be worth $2 million. Why? Not because it was better than the one that said Reggie Jackson. It's just there's only one of them. So you kind of have that thing. Now, I don't know, as far as Mustangs go, I don't know many cars they made many more of other than, you know, Camrys and Civics in 93 than Mustangs. So the point is it can never be worth that much because of the volume of the
right
ones they made. And, you know, if you look at Mustangs and you just sort of go through the history of them, the ones they made the least of are worth the most now. And the ones that made the most of are worth the least now, pretty much. And once in a while in the modern era, you know, Carroll Shelby will make, you know, 500 Shelby 500, you know, Super Snakes or whatever it is. And then, you know, you buy that car and you hang on to it for 20 years. Maybe it'll get back up to sticker. But
yeah,
that 93 or 92 Stang, they made a million of them.
You got
not
the V8 in
anything
there at least?
Yeah, it's a 5 liter.
All right, so you got that going for you.
Yeah.
But, all right.
I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it is what it is. There's some sentimental value there, but if it ain't going to be worth shit, it's not going to be worth shit.
Well, so I'm not saying go out and torch it. I'm just saying don't plan on putting the kids through college by selling it in 10 years.
Yeah, no, that's a car that you drive the shit out of, enjoy. Don't have to worry about people messing with it. It's a great car. It's just not going to be a Ferrari
car.
GTO class
right,
car.
Right.
Gotcha. Well, I appreciate it. I'll just keep not putting any money into it and just driving the shit out of it.
And enjoy it, too.
And you can enjoy it. Yeah, no pressure.
And if you do want to pump it up, get some NAS on there.
Yeah, toss on the NAS.
We're about the NAS today.
Yeah.
I was going to put a crate motor in it sometime, maybe.
That's a good project. But that's the shit that you can do and not worry about ruining a classic. You know, you're not going to do that to a Shelby GT350 Hertz or something. You're going to take care of it.
Right. But listen, if you're going to put that crate motor in, don't make the mistake I made. You take the motor out of the crate first.
All right, I'll make sure to do that.
Which one? Embarrassing.
Yeah, it's a learning process.
It is. All right. Well, I think that'll about do it for the Skype call segment on CarCast. Now let's continue with the rest of the show. Well, welcome to the parking lot once again. Now time to feature one of the cars from my collection. This time it's the poor man's Ferrari 308 Dino GT4 1976. Got it on eBay, sight unseen.
V8.
V8, 3 liters of V8. Let's talk about the things we like about the car and the things we don't like about the car. And again, it's a $30,000 Ferrari, so there are things you're going to not like about the car.
I think the thing that's kind of good, like we talked a little bit on investment cars, is that it's a $30,000 Ferrari. You can wear the jacket and the Ferrari shoes and the hat.
Yes. Yep. You can go to all the club events. You can park on the grass, and you can tell the ladies you're driving a Ferrari, and it's a $30,000 Ferrari. One of the things I can't stand about this Ferrari or any other Ferrari are these marker lights. I've gone into them in depth before, and speaking in depth, it's things 2 inches in, it's 4 inches by 3 inches.
It's a small suitcase in there.
Look how much better this looks here. and now it looks like fried shit. I can't stand this, and I hope someone backs into me just so I have an excuse to cover it up. The rest of the car kind of just looks like a early-looking Lotus. I mean, just has that sort of boxy front end. I'm sure this is one of those things that got put on when it got brought over to the
DOT,
States.
Hard
yeah,
work.
Some bad DOT, 2.5 mile an hour shit bumpers. But it's also a car that you could massage a little bit, like I'll get rid of these one day, and do a couple things to the bumper and make it into, you know, a nice, acceptable little Ferrari. I love the rims. I just love the classic style 14-inch rims there. I don't like cars in yellow. I don't like Ferraris in yellow, but this one sort of works in yellow.
I think it's not a bad... It highlights some of the subtle lines in the back. It's a neat neat color for this car.
I like the front end more than I like the rear end, but I do like the intake here. Interior better than the exterior on this car. Has all the gauges laid out nicely. Seats are... firm without being aggressive. It's a mid-engine car, so it has the trunk behind the engine compartment, which is up here. Well, maybe we should take a look at the engine and pop some of the hoods. Let's say, I think it's a four. It must be a four-cam V8.
3 liter.
Did I pop that or did I pop
the
trunk?
It?
Yeah.
Got both of them, but we'll start with the beautiful looking motor.
Yeah, it's a nice looking motor, and one of the things that we did to it is Sandy went and retrofit these nice Piper Cross air filters on there. I guess it's called Piper Cross.
Man, that's a damn good looking job, if I may say so myself.
They didn't make anything that fit, so Sandy made it fit for me. That's the beauty of the professor. They had just a sort of huge, and I don't know why you would do this, because you have these aluminum block, aluminum heads, all these great castings, the Ferrari stamped into the valve cover and so on and so forth, and then you take this huge hubcap, this huge trash can lid,
terrible,
just a black stamped piece of you know, sheet metal, and it completely engulfs the entire thing. It casts a horrible shit shadow over this entire beautiful engine. And you have four Weber carbs here, and again, four cams, and nice looking castings all the way around. And then you just take this huge thing. Like, it's weird. It's also weird that Lamborghini does this too. It's weird that you can be on one side of you can be so aesthetically oriented, and then the other side of you can shit all over it with huge looking medicine cabinet air cleaner on top of here. And by the way, they had the technology to make air cleaners that, you know, for what was an expensive car, another $40 could have made something that looked decent.
Yeah, add some aesthetic thought. Like, these have been around for years. I'm not sure, you know, when it all comes down to ultimate filtration, how well they all work against the standard Fram filters, but it makes you want to look at the motor now.
It's an expensive, impractical car. Why don't you just keep going with the filters? And as a matter of fact, one of these days I'll get some stacks with some screens on there, and we'll go for the ultimate visual effect. But again, small displacement, high revving. I think the red line, pretty sure it's like 7,500.
It's also a transverse RPM. Mount, which is interesting too.
Transverse mount, V8, and again the Dino. Is the other Dino, the swoopy Dino, is it's more than $100,000
more than this car.
It's about $125,000-$150,000 more than this car, and you get the V6. So that's one of the things I like about it. Again, it's a little boxy, and I don't like the markers, and I don't like the bumpers, but there could be a little massaging, and we might be able to correct some of that stuff. Let's take a look under the hood, or at least the front hood. Oh.
At least pop it.
I went to the wrong side. Did I pop it enough?
Yeah, you know.
All right. Radiator, battery, full size, no space saver in there. And
nice air horns, too.
Pretty straightforward, pretty clean. And, nice air horns. Again, nice steering wheel, nice gauge cluster. Got the round shift ball. Got this slotted gate there.
Yeah, it's a nice the overall layout of the car is nice. It looks like you could bang some gears in it. The dashboard has good gauge complement. To me, the car is not bad more than I look at it. And I like the yellow. I'm a yellow car person from the old days. I'm not so much of a red Ferrari person, but the yellow's kind of offbeat. So for me, it kind of makes it all even more interesting. Nice wheel. Good complement of stuff. You know, you can bang some gears. Good heel to toe action. Looks like the guy's on it, too.
And, like I said, really good visibility for a Ferrari, especially. Very very easy to drive. Very straightforward car. All right. So let me say this. If you have $25,000 to $30,000 to spend on a Ferrari and you don't want to be one of those dicks driving around the Magnum PI Ferrari.
Too common.
And you want something that's just a little bit different. And plus, when chicks want to know, you just tell them you drive a Dino. And they go home and they
Dino
Google
Ferrari.
That shit. And they
Holy
see a couple
shit.
On eBay for $175,000. Next thing you know, you're getting
magnet.
A Hummer in the parking lot.
Chick magnet.
That's right. So if you're going to spend $25,000 to $30,000 on a Ferrari, maybe you should look at the Dino GT4 and look away from the more dime a dozen Magnum PI car. Now time for Celebrity First Car with NBA great John Sally. John,
wow.
Your first car.
Was a Caprice Classic.
Mm-hmm.
My father gave it to me. I went to college in 1982. He gave it to me. It was a 1973 car. It was shit brown with a cream interior. But the best thing about it is one time, I got to tell you this, it's a true story. I'm in second grade, so it means I'm 7 or 8. And we were coming from King's Plaza in Brooklyn. And there's a beach not too far. Mm-hmm. So these girls from my neighborhood was hitchhiking. And I saw them, and I said, Ma, I know them. And she said, you do? I said, yeah, they live in the project. And so she pulled over, and these two hot teenage girls got in the car. That, you know, they were stars of the neighborhood. And they were, you know, they had the towels around them. And all they had on was their shorts. And they sat in the chair. And me and my boy Eric Jones just kept peeking through, you know, the little side thing. Because we had to sit in, my mother wouldn't let me sit in the back.
Right.
When they got out, the seat smelled like them.
Really?
And I loved that car.
Yeah.
I never forgot that. I was like, the white girls, they smell like the beach. I never, ever forgot that.
Well.
And it's true.
Yeah. Well, some smell like the beach. Others smell like parts of the ocean. And that's... You know, it's such a fine line, but that's really what you want to avoid.
And that's why that was my favorite. He said, hey, you know, I ain't got no money to buy a car. I said, I'll take that one.
So you just be back there smelling the bench seat?
When you're 8 years old and your hormones are starting to kick, you can smell anything.
Nothing better than vinyl with just a dash of poontang. All right. John Sally, Caprice Classic.
1973 Brown.
And that's his Celebrity First Car.
That was this week's CarCast. So until next week, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.